The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
Well, good evening. My name is Bob Lindsay. I am definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Bob.
The name of this session is Resolving Resentments. And I like the topic because, as I've come to learn, resentments are what were the core of why I started down that road. But anyways, I'll read a little bit of the stuff we have here at the start. It says, our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing oppressor media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous, and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being recorded and posted to the St. Louis OA website. It will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. We suggest that two hatters, that is, OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only to their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. So, basically, I'll tell you why. I got to be standing here on Saturday night? No. Why this is where I want to be. Again, I am a compulsive overeater. I'll get some of the gory details out of the way. I'm 62 years old, and I've been abstinent now since August 29th of 1998. And I have a sponsor, and I do sponsor people, and I have a home group. I do a lot of activities that were not part of my, shall we say, this is not what I grew up expecting to be doing. To be standing here in front of a group of people, I won't say a roomful, a group of people, and telling you how I felt about myself and my role in life was not, that didn't come naturally to me. And the funny part is, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. You're not going to sit there and break down in tears over what happened to me. So I'm wasting my time trying to portray myself as a victim. I grew up in a middle class area of a suburb of Cleveland to two working parents. Non-addicted, as far as I can tell. They raised us. They expressed their love for us. I don't know that they did anything that contradicted that expression. I wasn't abused in any way. But something, and maybe this is one of the mysteries that someday maybe they'll solve, but somehow I didn't feel good who I was. I didn't feel like I fit in. So I had a vision of the rest of the world around me is that you all had your S together. And somehow I didn't get the lesson plan, you know. And I could judge in any circumstance, initially, I could judge you all better than me. And eventually I was able, I converted that kind of a perverse way is if you were not for me to even feel any decency about myself, feel how good I had to down you either. It was either I'm not worthy, you know, that old Wayne's word, I'm not worthy, that was my mantra, or I'm better than. But I was never at par with the rest of the world. I could never look anyone in the eye and feel at one. All right, so you say, All right, that's not unusual, Bob. You know, a lot of people go through that. So why are you telling us all that? You know, you're standing in a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. What's all this got to do with, you know, just because you felt like you're a poor little deprived suburban kid, you know, don't whine about all your stuff to us, you know. But what is relevant to me today to know that and to remember all that in my life, because for some reason I started down a destructive path of physical addiction. Now, I can tell you that I qualify for membership in several other 12-step fellowships. I today participate actively in two of them. But this particular addiction overarches them all, encompasses all of them. The food was there before the others, and it was the last active one to go. And it's the one that tells me that everything, it lies to me in ways that the others eventually will reveal themselves. If I had continued to drink like I did, it was very obvious what was going to happen in my workplace, you know, blackouts and stuff. But this particular addiction, which was, you know, kind of the calming, you know, it was a distraction, like the other addictions were, except this one doesn't give me a buzz. It just kind of takes my mind off it. And I knew, I've been told for years that I had to lose weight, and I somehow never equated that. I acknowledged it. You can't argue with the doctors. I stopped going to the doctors. You know, that was my solution when people were telling me to do things that I didn't want to do. I just stopped going to them. But the lie that I know was that I was telling myself is it's going to be okay. I can use the food for this nefarious reason, which is to change how I feel. That is, I believe, why every addiction I had, I used it, even though I knew its destructiveness. My family, not my immediate family, my parents were not, as far as I can tell, they were not compulsive overeaters. I remember them being a little overweight. You know, my mother went to nursing school, came home one day after a nutrition class, and decided we were going to change the way we ate. And that started probably one of my first early resentments, and also started the conflict, because she had this idea, you know, they're school teachers, they're not wealthy, that she's going to plan her food out so that there's enough for a family of five and have leftovers. You know, she cooks this today, and she's got tomorrow's lunch planned or something. She did some weird things like this, you know. Mm-hmm. And she told us, don't touch that. That's for tomorrow. And I do things like come home early from school so I could get my fix. I'd raid the refrigerator, bottom line. And then I'd lie. Resentment, they say, is the number one offender. But I tell you what, lying, if it doesn't rate on par with it, it comes in a close second, you know. And because I was good at lying to everyone and to myself, the dishonesty, I look back now and it clearly revealed itself in what was going on in my life. Why do I start down this path? I would wake up, you know, I get a night's sleep. I wake up and I have a choice, and I have access. I've always had access to healthy food. I went to work right after high school. My mother was the one that had high aspirations. You know, God love her. I can respect that today. My dad was very much accepting whatever you kids want to do. My mother, she wanted us to go to college. I don't think they could have afforded to send me to college. She did send my sister. My brother and I fought her to a standstill. So that was, we didn't go to school. Got out of high school by the skin of my teeth. You know, here's your diploma. Good riddance to bad rubbish. Don't come back. You know. And it wasn't because I was just one of the rowdy kids. You know, I was. In fact, I go to reunions today, and a lot of people didn't recognize me because I was. You know, you look up the word loner in the unabridged dictionary, and you'll see my picture. You know, because I'm not worthy. Remember, I don't fit in. I'm not part of the in crowd. And I found out early on in life that I had to have a hook. If I wanted to have any sort of social existence with anyone, and the hooks turned out to be, let's stop for a drink, let's stop for a bite. You notice what I said? It's singular. I use the word singular. A drink and a bite. Now, I don't know about you, but I never stop for a bite, you know, any more than, you know, I would stop for a drink. But it sounds innocuous enough. So that was how I, and it was that interaction that enabled me to have any sort of social life at all with people. And I still had this lingering thing in my head that this is artificial. They really don't want to be with me, but they have to eat too, and so they're willing to, you know, people I worked with, for instance, we'd have to go out to eat before we went to work. I would spend half my time in hotels. That's my job involved. Every two tours of duty, I spent one night in a hotel. I work on the railroad. Didn't work on a railroad. I just retired, and so we go over one day, come back the next, but what I'm looking at I bought this iPad, and I got an electronic version of the Big Book, and there's a I was commenting that the word resentment is in there 54 times. And what it's telling me, you know, I need to get over the soul sickness. And I came to these rooms, and I love to tell you that I was quick studying. I mean, I was, the day I reached out for help to a friend of mine who was in 12-step recovery, I was contemplating actively how to kill myself. It's probably a blessing that I'm not well schooled in the ways of violence. I wasn't a sports participant. I never went into the military or anything. I'm too much of a wimp for any of that stuff, you know. I couldn't figure out how to do it without causing myself physical pain. And something enabled me to pick up the phone and call someone. And I know today, I didn't know then, the reason I called this particular man as a coworker. And I just play this scenario over my head, you know. I'm consumed with what people think about me. I know they don't, you know, if they knew me, they wouldn't like me. So I'm trying to put on a front, like I got my ass together, you know. So I pick up the telephone and call a coworker and tell him I'm depressed over my inability to start a diet and I'm contemplating suicide. You think that'd make me popular? No. The person I called had a spiritual awakening. That's the best thing I can tell you. A person I knew years ago, I couldn't articulate it in my head what was different about him. He was, I didn't believe him when he told me he was a drunk. And I mean, told me he joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I had to defend. Oh, I said, you weren't that bad, you know. He said, oh yeah, oh yeah. But the man that was there that day that I picked up the phone was a vastly different person than I had known. He had gone from an angry, you know, I mean, he had his own issues and his father was our boss, and I don't know if any of you work in an industrial workplace, but to have daddy be the boss, that's a that's a load I wouldn't want to carry around with me. So he just seethed anger. You know, he could trash talk the railroad as with the best of us. And 15 years later, he shows up there, and every bit of that anger was gone. Every bit of that, you know, there was a sparkle in him. And that's why I know today that when I was just totally out of my mind, I was able to pick that telephone up and call him and tell him how I felt. Now, you think I'm prepped to do the rest of this step work, right? I mean, I've already made some this horrible admission about how inadequate I am, you know, and you think I'd be ready to go through the process, but I got my senses back pretty quick, you know. But just to please him, you know, we don't all get to these rooms for the best of motives, and the motive doesn't matter, but to please him, I started going to meetings on a regular basis. One of the ladies at the meetings suggested I go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Now, believe me, I was nowhere near ready to admit that I had these other addictions. So she told me that I could go to, I probably couldn't have done, I don't think I could have done 90 and 90 with just OA meetings in Albany. We didn't have enough of them. So she said you can go to open AA meetings. And what eventually happens is, you keep hearing things. Now, I spend more time early on denying that I needed to do the things people were telling me to do. But eventually, when I finally... How can you hang around people that sparkled like my buddy Brad and not want some of that eventually? And when I finally got a sponsor, and it doesn't matter, it was in my other fellowship, but see... At that point in time, I've been dry, and, you know, for a while, and I've been abstinent. I still wasn't doing step work, and I don't know about you guys, but to be following a diet, which is what essentially I was doing, and not changing what's going on in here and what's going on up here, they call that in AA, they call it stark raving sober. So I guess I was stark raving abstinent here, you know. You know, I was not any better to be around, but I kept ending up in places. You know, I used to call it coincidence. I'd end up in groups and with people in fellowship that kept talking about the solution. And I ended up with a sponsor. It was one of these big book thumpers, and they warned me. They warned me about this particular group. I asked someone about this group. I saw a poster at one of my meetings. Said, "Oh, don't go there. Big book thumpers." You know, like there was a bad word. You know, I ended up with a sponsor at that group, and it turned out that he was half my age, about half the time I'd been in recovery, and he had that same light in his eyes, and he took me through this, and it's amazing how quickly. When you get up off your knees after taking your third step prayer, they tell me that I'm supposed to have a pad and paper in hand to start writing inventory. And right off the bat, the first thing it talks about is resentment. I mean, I'm writing an inventory of wrongs I've done, I thought. See, I didn't do it this way the first time around. The big book's talking about resentments. Now, my logical mind wants to know, what's that going to do to ease all the guilt and all this runaway emotion I have just talking about resentments? I mean, I've probably screwed over people that I actually liked in life because I was a taker, a user. But they kept talking about resentments. And what they... I made that list because at this point in my life, I wanted what they had. I made that list of resentments. And he spoon-fed it to me. You know, I'm glad that I'm not one that can read ahead in a book and understand or see what's coming. But he spoon-fed it to me. And it's kind of neat the way they set those columns up in the big book. You list who you have the resentment towards. All right, that wasn't too difficult. It started from everything from the God knows the U.S. government to the to every railroad company I'd worked for. I could point. See, I can spot hypocrisy from a thousand yards. You know, never mind my own. I can spot everyone else's hypocrisy from. And I made that list. Now, the second part of that I get to do is, what's the cause? Well, this was actually fun for me, because actually what I'm going to do is take your inventory. You know, I've got these people down on the list now, and I'm going to write down what you did to deserve to be on that list. And it was so I'm still on a roll. I've got a big notebook. I've showed one of my recent sponsors this whole notebook I wrote, since I moved to Missouri. And he decided that we weren't going to go through that again. But he told me what we are going to do. I get to the third column, and that's the pity pot column. How does it make you feel? You know, it affected my fear, my self-esteem, ego, whatever you want to call it. And then they hide in there this little thing, and I'm not going to try to look it up here. I'm not that proficient. But it says, essentially, setting aside the wrongs others had done. Whoa, I just spent all this time. Now, what it's telling me I need to do is look at my side of the fence. What did I do to get myself into those situations? And I found out how crucial that is later, because it forms the basis of my amends list. Doesn't tell us to start from scratch again. You know, we made a list of people we had harmed. We had it when we took inventory, it says. So, but the other part of this whole thing, it also, my first sponsor out here in Missouri that I did this with, that's all he wanted to talk about, was that fourth column, my role. And what I realized today is that that provided a key. I had never fully understood how to do steps 6 and 7. You know, yeah, I kind of, in a general way, knew what my defects of character were. You know, I mean, some of the more glaring ones were obvious, but by going over that fourth column, we call it the infamous fourth column, you know, I was able to identify to a T what my problems were. And that stuff helps me today go forward, because guess what? There ain't a single soul in that list, as far as I know, that's changed one iota. I've been able, obviously, to see and take a forgiving posture, because I see where I stoked the flames. But a lot of those people out there are worse than they were when they got on my list. You know, they haven't. And how do I deal? How do I deal with that? Because it's that. That's what caused my emotional peaks, is that up and down and runaway emotions over the perceived slights that are being done to me. And I say perceived because there wasn't a lot of reality come out of this head. And I get phone calls, and I used to be one of these people that would scream caller ID for a still sick addict to look at this phone, and I ain't gonna answer that. That was a character defect of mine. I have not a clue what that person's gonna say, but I've already started an argument up here, you know, because I've over something he said to me before. So I decided now, one of the things I do is I answer the call. Every phone call, unless there's actually some reason I have no way to answer the phone, I pick up the phone call, and guess what? 99% of the time, The other person's not looking for a fight. You know, I'm the one. Sponsor says, you know, Bob, when you're conducting both sides of the fight, he says, that's like arguing with an idiot. You know. And he wasn't worried about hurting my feelings, thankfully. You know. They say, save the rod, spoil the child. So I've had some pretty blunt sponsors over the years in both fellowships. You know, not just AA. I'm sponsored in both fellowships today, and I have some pretty people that will hold the mirror up to me. And the quicker I can dispose of emotions like that, you know, traffic. I mean, I made a conscious decision not to see how long I was never going to blow the horn on a car again, but to see how long I could go without blowing the horn on a car. And so every time the light turns green, there's a car in front of me and they ain't moving, I get to think about this. All right, Bob, you blow the horn, are they going to say, oh, thank you for reminding me, you know? No, they're gonna wave a digit back at me, and they're going to delay me more. And I've been able to go now for a couple of years. I haven't blown the horn in that car in traffic, you know? That, stuff like that. Because if I had to get off that roller coaster with emotions over what's going on and say, God, help me be useful. You know, that's one of the prayers I ask God. Each morning when I my prayer meditation is, keep me abstinent and sober, that I may better be of service to you and to those about me, that I may be more useful. And that was not a word in my vocabulary, you know. So this, you know, being helpful or charitable, being a goody two shoes or do gooder, that was a sucker's game for me. And you know, but so many places in the book it tells us our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum of service to God and the people about us. And all of this is about not getting off of that roller coaster. Because when I'm on that roller coaster, I've got emotions that only a chemical of some sort, food, whatever, is going to fix. And that's what continually drove me back off these diets. I had, you know, perfectly sensible diets, you know, and I couldn't stay on them. You know, I would always go back. And you know, in AA they have a saying that a guy gets up at one of my meetings, makes an announcement that if you don't take that first drink, you can't get drunk. And someone said one day, isn't that kind of obvious, Tom? And he said, if it's so obvious, why do people keep doing that? Why did I keep going back to the food? It's not like they've invented new foods out there that I'll try something different, that maybe this will not have the consequences. You know? And this is why this whole idea of getting these resentments under control, That was the prime task for me. If I was going to get off of this emotional roller coaster, was adopt a different attitude towards the world. Even when someone calls me up and they're ready for a fight, I work for my, you know, God's given me a platform to practice. I just retired from the Teamsters Union. You know, I think God created the International Brotherhood of Teamsters to give me a platform in which to practice these principles. Because people do not call, I have to tell you, most people do not call the office to say, Bob, I just wanted to let you know the railroad's treating us well today, the pay is good, and thanks for all you do, right? Nah. It usually starts off, you know, with these, I'll keep it clean, but you know, and I don't have to, you know, it's like, who are you talking to? You know, you can see how anyone that gets in my face and challenges me, and in other words, but they're not just mad about the issue, what they were saying to me is you are less than you are. You know, that's what I would extrapolate that, you know, that criticism over one act. I could turn that into all again about Bob. And today I can stop and think while someone's absolutely going off on an absolute rant and having a horrible hair day. I can stop, and somehow along the way, I can tell you by practicing this into my daily life today, and for the last 15 years, I've stayed on a food plan that tells me what abstinence is. I don't have to. I can look myself in the mirror. I can look you in the eye, and I know what it is. I used to use the excuse, well, you know, an alcoholic, we just stopped drinking, right? I mean, black and white, you know. But I got to take the genie out of the bottle three times a day, you know. And I don't have that uncertainty, you know. The food plan I follow today gives me, you know, I'm as certain about my abstinence as, say, when someone might be about whether they're pregnant or not. There's absolutely no doubt, and I don't want to stray from that today, and I believe the book tells me in many places it's contingent, that feeling is contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, and my spiritual condition is how I react out there. It's not what I do in this hour here, you know. Odds are before this session ends I am not going to binge, you know. What do I do when I get out there? I live downtown. I could eat in a different restaurant every meal a day and not repeat myself for God knows how long, you know. And it's not talking to me today. One other thing I just want to... There's a little... In one of the stories in the back of the big book, and this thing isn't paginated, right? It's called Freedom from Bondage. And there's a... This guy essentially talked about his resentments being his bondage. He says, he quoted something here. He said, in effect, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you ask in prayer for everything, see, and I'd tell you what, that'd be okay for me. I could say prayers like, I hope the SOB gets what he's got coming. You know, no, that's not what it tells me. It says, if you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really mean want it for them, and your prayers are only words, and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. And kind of, that's the way my prayer life started, you know. I didn't believe there was a solitary soul listening to me. But my sponsor said, get on your knees. And I was at that point of desperation. I'm just going to do what the man said without any argumentation. So I'd say it. And today I believe there's enough evidence in that there was a power listening. Do it every day for 2 weeks, and you will find you have come to mean it and want it for them. And you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. And the writer of this says that it worked for me then, and has worked for me many times since. And this book is just so full of spiritual actions we can take, and that's what I love about this. It's the stories are varied, not just because to help us identify, but the way they've applied these principles, these spiritual principles, into their lives is there's something in there, and there's a lot more. I just can't say enough. Not just the big book, too. I mean, I read Lifeline and a lot of the OA material, but bottom line is today, I'm feeling pretty happy with myself. Maybe, you know, I'm not going to break my arm and, you know, congratulate myself, but I'm not fighting with the food. I'm not fighting with the world. I recognize these emotions. I haven't been struck pure, but I recognize them usually before my mouth opens or my feet move, you know. You know, I what was the saying about putting, engaging your brain, before your mouth, you know. I'm learning to practice a lot of stuff. And I'm going to shut up with that. And we do have some time left for people that want to share or, I guess, ask questions. If you would like to share, since we're recording the meeting, come up to the here and speak. It's this little device here is what's recording that. So if anyone's got anything to say, come on up. Thanks a lot, guys.
I'm Janine, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Janine.
And I just had to share on this topic, resentments, because it is what got me into trouble in the 90s. And it was a self-righteous, well-deserved, entitled resentment that I had. I could tell anybody and they would agree with me that I deserved to have this anger and resentment. But, you know, it was an amazing situation after all those years of program, because I came in the mid-70s and this was the early 90s. That I had totally forgotten the big book says resentments are our number one offender and they will kill us. I had totally forgotten that. And another complication at that time, because of OA and all the service you had allowed me to do, I went back to college and I got, during this period of intense resentment, I was preparing to earn more money and leave this situation. And I got a bachelor's degree in business and a master's degree in communications. And a lot of it was built on things I had done for OA. But anyway, gradually, as the pounds creep back on at about 8 pounds a year, fortunately, when I graduated with this degree, I got together with a few friends and we decided to go through the workbook. And as we went through the workbook, I began to identify that gnawing inside of me, which I hadn't let go of for 8 years. And I became willing and I did what Bob suggested. I started praying for the person. The funny part about this is a very wise person in program who I respect a lot. At the time I explained what had happened from my husband, he said to me, "Oh, he must be in such pain to behave like that." Did I have a bit of compassion? Absolutely not. But years later, I heard those words come back to me. At the time, I thought, the heck with his pain, you know, what about mine having that done? So anyway, I did become finally willing. I did pray for him. I prayed for me to let go of it. I prayed to forgive. And lo and behold, the steps work. And I could talk about that situation without that rankling inside. And I was able to keep my commitment to abstinence again in the beginning of 2000. Now, if something makes me even the slight bit angry, I use this real simple little prayer, "Bless so-and-so, change me." And that just says it all. You know, if someone has made me angry, instead of justifying it to myself and telling the world and me and my sponsor how entitled I am to this anger or resentment, I decide immediately to pray for them, bless them, change me, change my attitude, and that frees me of it. I haven't had a deep-rooted resentment since that time, so in some ways I'm grateful for the experience, but not grateful for the pounds that I gained during those 8 to 9 years when I was caught up in that. But it's still humbling, you know, to say as an old-timer who believes in the steps, the big book, all the wisdom that's in there, forgot to use it when I needed it most. But I haven't forgotten since, and I've had other frustrations and things that happen, but I have used that experience to help me from there forward. So I love this title. I wish I'd gotten here on time, but thank you. Thank you for having a meeting on resentments, and thank you for leading it. I've always admired your program, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Vivian. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Vivian.
Thank you so much, Bob. I love the big book, and I love the part that you shared about the praying. It was very powerful. One of the things when I went through my fourth step, and I did exactly like Bob said, I wrote down all my resentments. I thought I was a pretty forgiving person, and 18 pages later, maybe not. But after I wrote them down, and right there in that little part of the big book where it's talking about your fourth step, was sort of an aha moment for me, because in another place, as Bob said, the big book talks about resentment 52 times.
Yeah, 54 times.
54 times. It's a big deal in the big book. But another, in this other place where it talks about it, was this huge aha moment. I loved how the big book in that chapter talked about forgiveness, because it said, think of the other person as being spiritually sick just like you are. And I was like, oh yeah, that's true. And then it says, ask God to help you have compassion on them the way you would have compassion on a sick friend. And I had a situation in my life where someone had betrayed me and hurt me very, very badly. And that was very helpful to realize that they were spiritually sick just like me. Maybe it looked different in their life, but it was spiritual sickness, and I knew what that looked like because I looked at it in the mirror every day. And since I've had the wonderful opportunity to serve as a sponsor, I've had sponsees who have said to me, well, I was abused as a child, or I was neglected as a child by an adult in my life. I don't know what to do with that. And so I would share with them what had sort of been that aha moment for me, that do you realize that that person was spiritually sick just like we are? And for everyone that I have shared that with, it's been an aha moment for them too, to realize they were sick. I remember one person, this wasn't a sponsee, but just a person I met who had talked about that they had felt neglected as a child by a parent. And when I mentioned that this is what the big book said, they were like, I never, ever thought about that before. And began to tell me, this was how this parent was sick. I see it now. I see why they were sick and how they had been hurt. And I think God started to do something there where forgiveness began to be a possibility. So I'm so grateful for Bob. I'm so grateful for the big book. I'm so grateful for you guys. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Megan. I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. I'm sorry I came in late. I got caught in the excitement outside and I couldn't find the room. So, but I'm here now. Thank you for letting me come in late and share. Before recovery, I remember when my mom used to always say things like, well, don't blame others for your, you know, discomforts, you know, and things like that. And she's like, you know, usually when you see something in somebody else that you don't like, it's something that yourself you have to take care of. That was before recovery. And I think my higher power for recovery and getting me in here, because resentment is number one defender. And although I may not have been, although I never had drinking problems, I'm trying to say, food was my self-medication, and like everyone else is in this room. And I love the big book so much because it just lays down the foundation. It's so easy to read the other literature in our program and for me to get just totally forget why I'm reading it. I get lost reading these stories, but I lose my way as far as trying to find, to live in my solution. And, I also another 12-step program, Al-Anon, and I did a 4-step in there, but, you know, the one in OA that I don't have, the big book, has been the best one, because although I've always kind of known people were my mirrors, and that my defects were my smokescreen, being in recovery now, especially OA and reading the big book, helps me really recognize them so much quicker, you know. And I'm on the sixth step right now, but I felt so much better when I got that darn four step done, you know. And my one of my main people on my list was my mother. My mother, like me, is a food addict. And she thinks it's great that I'm in OA, but of course, like most people, she wants to put the attention on people outside of her because it's so hard to deal on the inside. And that four-step prayer really broke that up for me, that resentment, because it made me realize that, oh, well, she's not perfect, and she did what she could. She did the best with what she had. It's a lot better than a lot of parents. I mean, a lot of people out there who've been neglected, like Vivian was saying, and everything. But, you know, we all do the best with what we have, and sometimes the best of what we have is, like, at the way bottom of the totem pole, where, like, you never even thought that that could ever be an issue for anyone. So, but thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Got a couple minutes yet, guys.
Going. All right, let's see what it tells me here. I want to thank everyone for attending. You know, they say it takes only two to have a quorum at a OA meeting, and we got a good quorum here today. So thank you guys. Those who care to, would you join me with the "I put my hand in yours"?
I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we can never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and you're worth it.